This evening's scripture reading will come from Colossians 4, verses 5 and 6. Colossians 4, 5 and 6. Conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person.
Josh gave me a warning, do not push this thing around, it'll go right over the top. Kids, don't try this at home, so go on that. So. All right, so I can get you to turn over to Romans, the first chapter. And tonight I'm going to talk about Christians and culture. Christians and our culture here today. You know, and I don't know if you talk to the old folks. They used to talk about, like, when I was a kid, we never locked our doors at our house. And I caught the tail end of that stuff back in the 60s. When I lived at Huber Ridge, we did not lock our doors at all. I don't even know if we had a key for the outside door and stuff. And you could just did that. Nobody thought anything of that. We never had any kind of trouble. Weird. I remembered this one movie out. I don't know if it's High and the Mighty. You see John Wayne. He crash lands out in Canada. It's wintertime, and they're trying to get organize a searching party. So Andy Devine, I don't know if you remember Andy Devine, he was this big guy, had a real high voice, and Black Bart's coming to town. He's like talking really high. And he's at like this YMCA in New York City. And his wife's calling him. And she says, "Dear, they want you to get to the airport so we can get this thing organized." He goes, "Okay." He says, "I'll send the kids right home." And he hangs up and he goes, "Timmy, Bobby," and you see these two little kids, smaller than Anthony and Andrew, come swimming up, and he says, "Dad's got to go to work." He says, "Do you have fare money for the subway?" And these two kids, "Yeah, I do." He said, "Okay, you take your brother home on a subway in New York City," and they could do that back in the 50s. "And just you two little kids get on this thing and this big thing, and you'll be fine and stuff." You know, so we looked at that. You know, we had good morals that dominated the characteristics of our society. Now, we did have people that were immoral. Yeah, we had a lot of those people doing it, but that kind of stayed in the shadows. If you brought out a scripture reading or a Bible, those folks were like a 1930s vampire movie. They just would cower back and go back into the shadows. They wouldn't challenge you to. But today, in June, when we got the gay pride parade coming down High Street, literally, they flaunt this. They're totally unashamed. They don't care about any of this kind of stuff. And that's the way that our society has kind of gotten. And it's been spoken of before. But again, Romans, the first chapter in verse 28, Romans 1 and verse 28, they talked about this. They had the same kind of problems back then with the apostles. And Paul writes here in verse 28, he says, "And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent and proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them." So we're looking at this. You know, they are definitely, I just say, we are definitely in the minority today. We look at that thing. And God's people have always been in the minority. Just to give you that notice there on that. We were the minority in Rome during the Roman times. We were the minority in Judah during the first days of the church. They were the minority in Macedonia and Ephesus, and that just like whole riots. The whole town would rise up against the apostles and that. So I guess the thing today is, how do we handle this now that we find in ourselves in the minority? How do we as Christians live our lives in a society that's becoming increasingly godless and kind of contrary, kind of hostile to the teachings that Christ has given us, that He wants us to live that? So we can get a little example of this with Daniel in Daniel, the first chapter. If we can go over there to Daniel, the first chapter, there, this is after Nebuchadnezzar destroys Jerusalem, and he brought a whole bunch of people back to Babylon. And we see here in chapter 1, in verse 3, it says, "The king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel, and some of the king's descendants, and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had the ability to serve in the king's palace, of whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies, and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so at the end of that time they might serve the king." But then we see a problem pops up here. He's giving them his food, but Daniel and his friends, being Jews, this is unclean food, and they can't eat this stuff. So how does he handle this thing? Because you have to remember, Daniel not only is in a society that he's being outnumbered in, he's a captive. He doesn't have any rights and stuff like you have here in the United States. For this, they don't have any rights at all. They're slaves in that. So you look in verse 8, it says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, 'I fear my lord the king, who appointed your food to drink. For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king.'" So this eunuch has got a problem too. He's worried about his life. If he agrees to Daniel's request, he could end up getting his head chopped off here. So he's got a definite skin in the game here on this thing. So how does Daniel handle it? Well, Daniel, among Daniel's gifts here, is that he's culturally savvy. He understands the culture. He understands the times and what people are thinking and how they're going to react with someone who is different, to someone who's serving the Lord. So you see, he works this up. So in verse 11, "So Daniel says to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, 'Please test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and to the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants there.'" He doesn't say, here's the deal, we're going to eat these vegetables, and if you don't think we're doing very good, we'll start eating all of your food that's unclean. No, he said, give us this chance to show, and then you deal with us. You know, it's kind of like he dealt with those guys when they wouldn't bow down to the king's image and got thrown into the fire. He was going to have to do this. But he's culturally savvy to say, hey, let's try this, and they do that. He isn't jumping in, having a sit-in strike or anything like that. He's savvy to the culture here. So we're looking at this. He understands where he is, and he understands what the steward's going to go through if this thing fails. So he comes up this creative way to solve these problems. The problem of this guy's head getting severed, and this guy, of them being able to serve God there. And this is interesting, because the way societies go, sometimes Christians get into that temptation of, you know, we really can't serve Jesus because we're living here in Babylon. It's going to be, we're going to have to do some compromising here to get things, to smooth things over here. And we may have to cut things short with the Lord here so that we can appease the society here. So we want to look at how we can be like Daniel. We can understand the times. And so how we still want to be able to serve God here, so we can understand this. how we can do this. Now, we're not going to use the withdrawal method. That's where we all get together and we buy some land in Texas and we all move there. Of course, Kay and I, we're voting for Wyoming, but no, we're out there and we're going to get a commune together, or we're going to go to some mountain somewhere and we're going to have a difficult way of getting to us, and then we're going to have this commune and we're all going to serve the Lord, and nobody's going to be able to talk to us. We're not going to do that. Also, we're not going to do the whining and complaining method there, where we're just whining and complaining until people leave us alone and act like they, you know, how I guess, but also whine and complain to everybody that's a Christian. Everything's so bad. I can't be a Christian. It's really bad out here. So they go, okay, well, let's leave you alone there on that test. What we're looking for here is wisdom. We're looking for how we can serve God in this kind of society here and get by here. So Anthony read here, there in Colossians, the fourth chapter, verse 4 and 5. You know, so chapter 4, in verse 4 and 5, he says, that I might make it manifest how I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward those who are on the outside, redeeming the time. And let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each one. We want to be wise in how we are Christians here, and being able to realize where we're at, and to be able to serve God even though we're in this society. So I look at this, we've got kind of four important shifts in society here that's occurred over the last few decades, and changes in American thinking. Oh, this is American thinking because that's where we're at here. And we need to be aware of these, because these society shifts can affect you, they can affect your family, they can affect when you're at work, and your ability to be a disciple, and especially an ability to how to spread the word to others here. You know, and also kind of what our responses should be to these kind of shifts in society here. So, okay, so here's the shifts. There's four of them here. The shift is now to the highest good. I don't know if you've heard that term. We're looking at what's the highest good. Now, the highest good for people is individual freedom and happiness. What's best? What's best? It's me. What's best for me? Now, the culture used to kind of praise the personal sacrifices of others, people that would be giving and sacrificing themselves for other people. But now, you've maybe heard this term, hey, no good deed goes unpunished. You know, what you're saying, like, hey, you really don't want to be helping people out. Every man's for themselves anymore. You know, and you see that in like on a bus or something, or a train, some lady's expecting and she walks in and all these guys are just sitting there on their chairs and they're not even getting up for this lady. They may even talk to her and say, hey, when you do? And you're like, no, but I'm not going to give up my seat for anybody here and stuff. It used to be you'd open doors for ladies. Now, it's women's liberation. They can open their own doors and stuff. And they're not ashamed of anything like that. So it's everything's for me and stuff. You know, could we have those kind of sacrifices that we had in World War II, where guys were sacrificing themselves? You had that thing on the Marines raising the flag on Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima, and how embarrassed those guys were that raised that flag, and they put them on these bond tours to try to get bonds, and they were calling them heroes, and they were just so embarrassed because they knew what had happened. He says a lot of Marines had fought and died to get those guys up to that position on that hill where they could put that flag up there, and they weren't looking for praise and everything, so they were completely embarrassed. But today, it's all self-promotion. It used to be like you'd see in football games, some guy would make a great play to win the game, and they'd be interviewing him, and he'd be going like, oh, it was, nothing, it was a team effort, we did really good. Now what do you get? Yes, right, I did it. I did the thing. It's, hey, everybody, look at me. And stuff. So it's all self-promotion. It's all me and stuff. So the highest priority in society now, it's not others, it's me. It's what I want. It's how I want to live. And I don't care how it affects society and stuff. How I feel is a deciding factor. How, what's my truth? And this is not new. In Judges 21, verse 25, it's kind of the theme of Judges. It says, in those days there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what he thought was right in his own eyes. And people were doing some weird things that they thought it was right in their own eyes. And that. Isaiah 5 and verse 20, it says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. You see that in society. They look at this thing and they're just like, well, this is really goofy thinking, but that's what they want there. We look at, you know, why there's this belief that there's no absolute standards. There's my truth. Whatever I want to do is fine in that. You know, that's why we have such a high divorce rate. I don't feel like working this marriage out. I'm just gonna kick my wife to the curb and go find somebody else and stuff. And if that doesn't work out for them, I'm gonna do it again and again here and stuff. Why we've got so many abortions in this country. You know, you always see these people talking about, oh, what about the life of the mother, or if in case of rape or something like that. I tell you, 99.9 whatever percent of the abortions has nothing to do with rape or health. It's, I do not want to take care of this kid. And I will sacrifice this kid, kind of like they sacrificed to Moloch back in the days of Israel to get my happiness there. So I don't want this kid around and stuff. And that's what's going on here. So it's the me decade kind of thing. It's the me-ism here. Second shift in society we've got. People are becoming more aggressive. They become offended really easily. They're getting touchy here. So we're looking at this thing. If we go over to Matthew, we can see that this has happened before here. In Matthew, the 15th chapter of Matthew, we can see an incident happen with Jesus, with the Pharisees. They're in Matthew 15, and in verse 1, he says, and the scribes and the Pharisees who were from Jerusalem came to Jesus saying, why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash with their hands when they eat bread. So they're making this statement here. You guys are sinning because you're transgressing our traditions. So then Jesus answers in verse 3, he says, why do you also transgress the commandments of God because of your tradition? For God commanded, saying, honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death. But you say, whoever says to this father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is a gift to God, then he need not honor his father or mother. Thus you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your traditions. Hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. So then he calls the multitude together to himself. He said to them, hear and understand. It's not what goes into the mouth that defiles a man, but what comes out of the mouth that defiles a man. And then here in verse 12, then his disciples came and said to him, do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this saying? You know, you do that today when you're preaching about something or you're making a statement. What happens? Everybody gets offended. So we want to, watch out. You don't want to offend anybody. But Jesus answers here in verse 13. He says, every plant which my heavenly Father had not planted will be uprooted. Let them alone. They are blind leaders of the blind. And if the blind leads the blind, both will fall into the ditch there. So we look at today. You know, it's hardly anything can go by without somebody being offended. And people are walking around on eggshells. Be careful what we say. And then that's probably another result from this. If you're worried about offending everybody, you know the way not to offend anyone? Don't talk to them. Just look down and walk. Just act like they're not there. And we're doing that. You get on social media and you make a little statement and you watch what happens on social media. All these people coming in there, they're all complaining about that. They make stands on things they don't know anything about. They're always yelling at you. And if they don't have an argument, then what happens? You get the little laughing emojis come out, and they start calling you names like you're a Nazi or you're a bigot or homophobic. Big one now is anti-Semitic. I don't care what it is. You're talking to somebody has nothing to do with Jewish religion, and you're saying something, ooh, that's really anti-Semitic. It is? Yes. And they drag that thing out. They use that as a weapon here and stuff. So we got that. We got people that are touchier, and we got people that get offended way easier than they ever used to be and stuff. And that's another one of our shifts. A third shift in our society is though people aren't looking for God, they are very spiritual. They're very deep on these things. You know, anything that invokes a feeling of awe or wonder, so it makes the person feel small, that can be labeled as a spiritual experience. You know, so standing next to to Niagara Falls and you see all that water coming over there and it makes you feel small. Like, wow, that is something. That just makes me feel spiritual on this thing. You know, on this thing. You know, so and we see the statement. I don't know if you've heard this statement. It says, I'd rather be fishing on Sunday thinking about God than in church thinking about fishing. You know, so I want to be where the spiritual things are and stuff on this. So we look at here. If we go over into Colossians, the first chapter, we get the actual biblical definition of what it is to be spiritual here and stuff. We look there in Colossians 1 and verse 9. And he says in Colossians 1 and verse 9, he says, for this reason we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to ask you that you may be filled with the knowledge of His will and all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing Him, being fruitful in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God here. You would, being truly spiritual, it says we're seeking the knowledge of His will. So we might walk, and then we want to walk worthy of that knowledge and stuff of what we're doing, being fruitful in every good work. And in verse 10, increasing in the knowledge of God. We're constantly reading and studying, hearing sermons. I want to know what God's will is on every subject so that I can live that way. You know, people today, they worship the creation instead of the Creator. They're just looking at all the plant life, the animals, and just like, and you just see this constantly. There's all this, wow, this stuff makes me feel so spiritual because it's the nature thing. Instead of who created this nature and stuff. And this creation is just a small part of who God is. He's way deeper in this. So we're looking at this thing. It's just a small part. So where do we learn the rest of it? Well, we learn it by the knowledge of His will. Knowing His will leads us to walking in His will. And in our accepting and doing His will. And in verse 10, we bear fruit. And this is what being a spiritual person is all about. Okay, but society is becoming spiritual, but not religious here on this. Okay, our fourth one is that we're running very short on hope in society today. People are really depressed. You get the mental health problems that we have in this country. Depression, sadness, you get a rising suicide rate, all the drug use and alcohol use and that. People trying to just to feel better. They're constantly upset and stuff like that. You know, life is bad and it's just not getting better. You know, and it might be that the worldly things that we have are just not working. You know, people trying to get more and more possessions and that, thinking that it's going to make them feel better, and they're finding out that's not working here. So we look over in 1 Peter 3, 1 Peter the 3rd chapter, and I've talked about this on Wednesday. You know, 1 Peter 3 and verse 15, he says, but sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. So we're looking again. We always use this verse to talk about what? We want to know our Bibles. So anybody asks us a question on a subject, we can give them an answer. And we can give it to them really quickly in that. We'll be able to defend this thing. But we're looking at this thing. He says, though Peter's saying we want to have a defense for everyone who asks you for the reason for the hope that is in us. How come we have hope when these people are all depressed and committing suicide and struggling in that, you know? He said, you know, why do we have a hope when the culture is telling us that we don't have hope? Now, okay, so folks, this might seem like it's been a downer lesson here for the week, but trust me, it gets better here. You know, Daniel lived during a time of captivity. I got a feeling that was pretty low for those 70 years in that. And so people might think, it's really bad. Is it as bad as it's ever been? No, it's not even near what it has been like that. You know, and actually, in a time of increasing darkness, it might make our light shine even more. I've heard him said like in pitch black, a candle, you light a candle, people can see that 20 miles away. Just that little. As darker it is, the more our light kind of shines. And we have, because of this darkness, we get an awful lot of opportunities to comfort others, to spread the word, to give them hope. And we want to let our lights shine even brighter. Let me give you an example. This, I ran this over with my wife. She said it was okay. Back in the 80s, true story. Anyway, since my wife is over in Dayton, Ohio, like a little teacher's conference thing. They have downtown Dayton, and they're staying at this hotel. And so her and a couple of her teacher friends, they go, hey, let's go get something to eat. So they go to get something to eat. On their way back, she's walking, and all of a sudden she sees sitting on this kind of ledge, all, I don't know how many, 10, 15 of these teenage boys. And so what's my wife do? Hi, how are you guys? What's going on today? Oh, it's great. I love your city. It's a great place. And she goes, hey, I noticed you all wearing those same red bandanas. Are you guys in a club or something? And what was it? Carol was going like, yeah, we're teachers. I'm a, you know, this, I do this stuff. And there was this lady that was the guidance counselor. She's like, hey, nice to meet you guys. Come on, guys, we got to get going. Let's to go and stuff. And she finally pulls Karen and them away and Carol away. And she gets into the hotel. She goes, don't be talking to those guys. Why? They seem like really nice boys. And he goes, no, they're a street gang. They're the Crips and stuff. She goes, well, they sure seem like nice kids and stuff. And that's the thought, like, you know, we're all walking around, you know, things are so dark, but then how you treat other people, it's just, they're not expecting that. They're not expecting people to talk to you and stuff there. So we stand out with. So in a way, society is better suited for us now for the word here. We look here in Revelations, the third chapter. That's that one we're talking to the church at Laodicea. And remember, Revelations is not a scary book. Tim went through a whole class on it. It's not scary. People get scared of it, but it's not scary. But in Revelations, the third chapter, in verse 14, he said, and to the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, these things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish that you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold or hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. So what he's saying here, says, I wish you would either be a Christian or don't be a Christian. Don't be in this one foot in the Lord and one foot in the world, because you're just getting confused in here. The person who's a lukewarm Christian, they're not feeling very good, and then they're upset. They don't understand why, because they think they're Christians. They don't understand why they're reacting to this world here. But people that are, you know, because people that are completely worldly, they're really miserable, but then they start to understand why I am miserable. Because this worldly ideas is just not working for us there. I remembered one show where they made the statement, they says, everybody wants to live in the middle. They want to live in the middle. But a lot of us can't tell where the middle is, so we go to the edge. And we look over. Some people fall off of it, but others go like, look back and go like, oh, that is not, notice I didn't do this now. So they go like, they see where that is, and they go, oh, that's, I know where the edge is. Since I know where the edge is, now I know where to get to into the middle. I want to be there. But we're going like, walking around all middle of the road as a Christian, we're going to be upset. We're not going to understand why. We hold on to some of the worldly traits, and it's going to cause us grief and stuff, instead of being all for God, doing everything we can, being spiritual for God, instead of all, or if it's all worldly, then they have a clear idea of what good is going to be here and stuff there. That's why this Colossians 4 in verses 5 and 6 is so important. We got to walk in wisdom here, so we just don't go floating around and not thinking of anything. We're on duty all the time. So we walk in wisdom toward those who are on the outside. We let our speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt. So, because like the Bob Dylan songs goes, the times, they are a changing. We need to be wise in how we handle the times that we're in. Now, though the message does not change, it will never change. Hebrews 13:8, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. But the way we deliver the message can change. So it's less of that that fire and brimstone stuff that we used to have. Because now you got people that don't care. So we've got to be able to talk to them. So now it's more of the Isaiah 1:18. Come, let us reason together. We want to be able to do that there. So it's speaking to others the way Paul speaks to the Athenians in Acts 17. Have you ever watched? Read that thing. First thing he talks about, that's the ones that they're worshiping. They got a temple to an unknown God. So Paul says, let me tell you about this God that you worship. So he doesn't scream at them you need to obey Jesus or you're all going to hell. He just kind of points out their religion. He says, you know, God who created all things isn't like he needed any of this stuff. You know, he doesn't need anybody to bring him food. That was one of their things, that their requirements, is to bring all this food to the temples so they could feed these gods who needed this food. And I'm sure that was an aha moment for a lot of these Athenians. They're going like, yeah, why do we have to give our gods these foods? Can't they just make their own? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me. You know, God has us sacrifice. Had us sacrificing animals because of our sin. We needed to have a little cost associated with our sin. That's the reason he's doing that. He didn't have them sacrifice these bulls and stuff because he wanted that stuff. He could have made those all that they wanted to and stuff. So we got to be looking at that. You see that how he talks on this. We have to start understanding where people are coming from. So they're going to be coming from all different lives, all kinds of situations that they've had, you know. So that, so we still, you know, like I always say, like, are you prepared for what walks through the door here and stuff? When they got the tattoos and the motorcycle gang stuff and everything, and we're going like, we're scared of them. No, we don't want to do it because they're looking. They've been on the edge. They're looking for the middle here. They're trying to find God there. It's time to let our light so shine because it shows us how we're different here. So it's more discussing. It's less yelling. And then we don't want to be arguing with people over stupid things here. If we go to the book of Titus here, Titus, I think the third chapter in verse 9, he says, but avoid foolish disputes, genealogies, contentions, and strivings about the law, for they are unimportant and useless. We need to be aiming for the bullseye, for the main thing. I had a guy, saw a preacher show this to us here. You got like a big target with the different circles. In the middle, what is in the middle? What's the bullseye? The bullseye is, what do I have to do to be saved? What do I have to do to be accepted by God? That's the bullseye. But we get on the second ring or the third ring or the fourth ring. Why don't you guys have a piano here? Well, let's argue that for a while. Why don't you have women preachers? Okay, we'll argue about that stuff. And we spend all of our things. You know, what do you guys think about abortion? And we're spending all of our time talking to people about that or arguing with someone when we don't even have time to mention about what the plan of salvation is there. So, you know, so he says, you know, they're not, you know, you're not going to agree with that stuff. And then maybe you're going to have to, even before you even get to the Bible, you're going to have to start talking to them about whatever their religion is, to see what the problems are with that. Kind of like Paul with those in Athens in there. You know, what standard are you going to use there and stuff? So I saw this thing on Gospel Broadcasting Network. They were the video was about the essentiality of baptism. And I kid you not, one of the comments from somebody was, well, I think there's more important things we should be talking about. I said, we're talking salvation here. I think that's it. You know, he wants to talk about something else, and that's what we're dealing with in this society. And also, we need to know when to move on in this society. Titus 3:10, he says, but reject a divisive man after the first and second admonition, knowing that such a person is warped and sinning, being self-condemned. So we're looking at that. because you want to talk to somebody, and that's good, but if they're not wanting to listen to you, then it's okay to move on to the next one. Yeah, they talked about that in Matthew 10 and verse 14, that they shook the dust off your feet if they're not going to receive us. And we want to speak the truth in love, Ephesians 4 and 14 and 15. Okay, so conclusion for this, Joshua 1, 5 through 7, it's just told to be strong and be courageous. At that time, the children of Israel were going to go into Canaan, where the giants lived, where they were a minority, a small people. But he's telling them, you need to be strong and you need to be courageous. We're going to follow God's teaching. They were on the offensive. Even today, you may think we're all surrounded and we're the minority, but we need to be on the offensive still. We don't be like, okay, I'm just going to come into our church building and just by ourselves. Because that, in a way, that's like that withdrawing thing. We're just going to talk amongst ourselves and not go out into the world. We've got to let our lights so shine there and stuff. You know, and it's really dark out there, but in a way, it's better. Instead of lukewarm, it's turned a lot colder. And that gives us that opportunity now to spread the gospel. James 4:7 says, submit to God and resist the devil, and he will flee from you. But it may be a lot more now of being assertive rather than being aggressive. Less of the fire and brimstone stuff and actually talking to them and reason together. And then more of Daniel and more of Colossians 4:5, walking in wisdom, how to deal with this culture. So thank you all for your attendance on this. And so we offer this time now for anybody that needs some help. Let us know how we can assist you anyway. Well, we'll stand and we'll sing our song of invitation.